I have to be honest with you. I was reading through the World Economic Forum's Global Cybersecurity Outlook for 2026 this morning, and I literally just put my coffee down.
Oh yeah.
I just completely stopped reading.
Was it the ransomware numbers again? Because those are usually the headline grabbers.
No, and that's exactly the thing. It wasn't ransomware at all.
Really?
Yeah, for the first time, fraud has officially overtaken ransomware as the number one concern for CEOs. And get this, in 2025 alone, 73% of respondents said they were personally affected by cyber-enabled fraud.
Wow. That is a massive shift. Think about it.
Yeah.
We have spent the last decade treating cyber attacks as these distant technical events,
Right.
like things that happen to systems or servers in a dark room somewhere. But now, 3 out of 4 leaders are dealing with it personally. It's no longer just a business risk, it's a life risk.
Exactly. It feels like the ground has shifted completely under our feet while we were busy, watching for the usual suspects.
Yeah, we were looking the wrong way.
We really were. So, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are unpacking a stack of reports that paint a very specific and, frankly, somewhat unsettling picture of where we are in early 2026.
Unsettling is definitely the word
It
for
ain't
it.
right. And our primary guide through this maze today is the NZ Incident Response Bulletin from February.
And before you tune out thinking a bulletin from New Zealand sounds a bit niche, it is actually the perfect microcosm for all of
I
this.
was just going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, because New Zealand tends to be this fascinating testbed for global trends. It's highly digitized, but geographically isolated.
Right.
So this bulletin actually connects the dots perfectly between the high-level strategy happening in Davos at the World Economic Forum to ransomware attacks, shutting down trash collection in Connecticut, to some very clever visa hacking over in Australia.
So our mission today for you listening isn't just to, read the news clips. We really want to figure out how the landscape has moved from hackers locking up computers to what the experts are now calling systemic risks.
No.
We're talking about the convergence of AI, geopolitics, and this whole new era of corporate accountability.
It really is the difference between a technical glitch and a genuine business crisis at this point.
So let's start with that systemic idea. That word is doing a lot of heavy lifting in the WEF report.
It is, yeah.
They've identified a new big three regarding risk. We already mentioned fraud as number one, but what's driving this entire ecosystem right now?
Well, the WEF argues that cyber risk is becoming systemic because three forces are merging way faster than companies can adapt.
Okay.
You've got AI acceleration, geopolitical fragmentation, and of course, that massive rise in fraud we just talked about.
They sort of feed off each other.
Exactly. They act like force multipliers for each other.
Let's touch on the AI piece first, because I think that's on everyone's mind. The report says 94% of respondents see AI as the biggest driver of change.
Right.
But are we talking about the Terminator scenario here, like robots writing code to break into banks?
I mean, that's part of the anxiety, sure, but the reality is much more mundane and arguably harder to stop.
How so?
The fear has actually shifted from attackers using AI to unintended data exposure. We're seeing massive concern about generative systems and what they call agentic systems.
Agented system, so AI that acts on your behalf.
Right. Think about it in a daily context. You have employees who just want to be more efficient. So they take highly sensitive strategy documents, they paste them into an AI tool and say, hey, summarize this for me.
Oh, wow.
Or you have an AI agent that has permission to read all your emails just so it can schedule your meetings.
And suddenly that data isn't yours anymore. It's just out there.
Exactly. It leaks out into the training model or gets exposed through the tool itself. So it's not always a malicious hack by a guy in a hoodie. Sometimes it's just pure negligence happening at the speed of light.
Right.
It's the oops factor,
Right.
but scaled up globally.
That makes total sense. It's efficiency basically biting us in the back.
It really is.
But then you have the geopolitical side, which feels quite a bit less like an oops and much more like a deliberate strategy.
This is huge right now. 64% of organizations are now specifically accounting for geopolitically motivated attacks. And we actually have a really stark, concrete example of this in the stack from Latvia.
Yes, the report from Latvia's National Security Service, the SAB, they are saying attacks hit a completely record high in 2025 and 2026.
And look at the attribution there. The report explicitly states that Russia remains the primary threat, targeting Latvia specifically because of its political and military support for Ukraine.
So this isn't about stealing credit card numbers to go buy flat-screen TVs on the dark web. This is punishment.
Precisely. It's hacktivists targeting operational technology. We're talking factories, transport, critical infrastructure, all for intimidation.
Just to cause chaos.
Yeah, they aren't asking for a ransom. They are trying to disrupt society to make a political point. And that is a completely different threat profile than a criminal gang just looking for a payout.
That distinction is so important for people to understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a criminal wants money, you can theoretically negotiate. But if a state actor just wants you to suffer, there's no negotiation to be had.
Exactly. You can't buy your way out of that.
But speaking of criminal gangs and payouts, we have to talk about how the business model of cybercrime is changing.
The evolution of extortion.
Right. Because I feel like for the last few years, all we heard about was encryption. You know the classic model. We locked your files, pay us in Bitcoin to get the key.
That model is actually under a ton of pressure right now. Companies have gotten much, much better at backups.
Okay.
So if you lost my files today, I just restore them from last night's backup and entirely ignore you.
So the criminals had to pivot.
They adapted. The new scary thing, as highlighted in the recent Nike incident, is steal and leak.
Just do it indeed. Or in this case, just steal it.
Right.
So looking at the notes here, a group called WorldLeaks claims to have grabbed 1.4 terabytes of data from Nike.
And here is the twist. It doesn't appear to be the usual customer database full of credit cards or passwords. The report suggests it's internal business operations, design workflows, manufacturing documents.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate here for a second. As a consumer, I obviously panic if my credit card is stolen because that's my money.
Sure.
But I don't know if I really care if Nike's internal memo about shoelaces is stolen. Why is this considered such a high-severity event?
Well, you might not care, but Nike's board certainly does. This is what we call commercial sensitivity risk.
Ah, okay.
If you seal the blueprints for the next 3 years of upcoming products, or the supplier contracts, or the internal cost structures, you basically enable counterfeiting on a massive, massive scale.
Oh, I see. You're giving the knockoff factories the exact specs. They don't have to guess anymore.
Exactly. You're giving your competitors direct intel on your margins. The damage isn't that the factory stopped working because the computers were locked. The damage is that the company's deepest secrets, their entire competitive advantage, are now public.
It's essentially intellectual property theft that's held for ransom.
Yes. And because they didn't lock the computers, business just continues as normal. But the trust and the value of the brand is silently eroding in the background. It's much more insidious.
That is terrifying. And there is another side to this business of crime in the bulletin that I found really nasty. The Financial Markets Authority in New Zealand issued a warning about recovery scams.
Oh, these are awful.
This is essentially kicking people while they're down, right?
It is predatory in the extreme. Imagine you've already lost money in a scam or a hack.
Yeah.
You are desperate. You feel foolish.
Right. You're vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. Then you get a message claiming that your funds have been recovered by some official-sounding government agency. They use fake bank logos. They look incredibly legitimate.
Good news. We found your Bitcoin. Just sign in right here to claim it.
And when you sign in, they steal your banking credentials again, or they hit you for some fake administrative fee.
Unbelievable.
The real insight here for you listening is that previous data breaches constantly feed future crimes. A list of victims from one hack is a highly valuable commodity on the dark web, because those specific people are already identified as vulnerable.
It's a completely vicious cycle. They bleed you once, and then they sell your name to someone else to bleed you again.
Precisely. It never really ends.
Okay, let's take a breath here. We have AI leaks, we have geopolitical intimidation, and sophisticated extortion where they don't even need to lock your computer anymore.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. So the natural question is, what do we actually do about it? Mm-hmm. And this brings us to a topic that usually makes people's eyes glaze over. Governance.
I know. Governance sounds like the part of the meeting where you discreetly check your email or plan your lunch.
Definitely.
But the sources this month are absolutely screaming that when the dust settles, governance is actually the only thing that saves you.
There's an op-ed in the source material titled, "When the Dust Settles, What Inquiries Reveal About Cyber Readiness." And it makes this really compelling point that usually people ask, did you have a firewall? But the real question regulators are asking after a breach is, did you have a paper trail?
That's the core argument.
Yeah.
We have examples here, like the inquiry into the Manage My Health data breach in New Zealand or the Australian Clinical Labs case.
Right.
When these things finally go to court or get reviewed by the government, They don't just look at the hack itself, they look very closely at the decisions made during the chaos.
The phrase that jumped out at me from the reading was, assessment to notification is a governed process, not an improvised meeting. Can we unpack that a little?
Absolutely, because that is the key takeaway here. Imagine a breach happens on a Friday night. It's 8 p.m.
Okay.
You have a panic meeting with the CEO and the head of IT. You decide not to tell the public quite yet because you aren't exactly sure what happened.
Which sounds totally reasonable in the moment. You don't want to cause a massive panic over nothing.
Right. It feels completely logical. But 3 weeks later, it turns out you were entirely wrong and millions of people were exposed. The regulator steps in and asks, why didn't you tell him sooner?
And if your answer is just, well, we sort of chatted about it over coffee and decided to wait.
You are in big, big trouble because that looks exactly like a cover-up or, at best, gross incompetence. But if you can show a document, a literal piece of paper or a timestamp digital log that says, on Friday at 8 p.m., we assessed the risk as low because of X, Y, and Z criteria.
Then you actually have a defense.
Precisely. You need evidence of how risks were assessed, not just what the final decision was.
So it's about the process.
The reasonable steps defense we hear about in law isn't about having perfect impenetrable security. You can have the best firewall in the absolute world and still get hacked. The defense is about having a logical, documented reason for why you did what you did. It turns the subjective feeling into an objective fact.
So you can't just say, hey, we intended to secure that database. You have to literally prove you had a governance structure that forced you to check it.
Yes. The Ministry of Health Review called this a structured assurance phase, which, again, sounds incredibly boring, but it is literally the difference between a minor fine and a massive firing. It's a difference between negligence and diligence.
So write it down. If it's not written down, it didn't happen.
That's the golden rule. Write it down.
Yeah, you can have all the governance in the world, right? You can have the absolute best paper trail. But you still need actual people to do the technical work. And frankly, the outlook there seems a little bleak.
Yeah. We are losing. That's a direct quote from Johan Lepassar.
And he is the executive director of the EU cyber agency, ANISA. That is really not what you want to hear from the guy essentially in charge of Europe's cyber defense. Just, we are losing massively.
He's definitely not sugarcoating it. And the statistics completely back him up. He notes that software vulnerabilities, so the actual bugs in the code we use every single day, jumped from 17,000 in 2019 to over 41,000 in 2025.
The sheer volume is just overwhelming.
It is.
But there was another number in there that I found genuinely terrifying. The time to exploit.
Oh, yeah. That is the scary number. For those listening, that's the time from when a bug is found and publicly announced to when hackers actually use it to break in.
And what are we looking at now?
Well, it used to be about 2 months.
Which gives you a bit of breathing room.
Exactly. You had time to test the patch, time to deploy it, time to schedule weekend downtime. Now it's dropped to one single day.
One day.
One day.
So a vulnerability is announced on a Tuesday morning, and by Wednesday morning, the automated attacks are already hitting your firewall.
Which is exactly why Europe is calling for a complete doubling of capability.
Yeah.
They simply don't have the bodies to patch things that fast. The defenders have to be right every single time. The attackers and their automated AI bots, they only have to be right once.
But there is a glimmer of hope in the stack today, or at least a really cool story about how we might actually find those defenders. I want to talk about Jacob Riggs.
Oh, this is a fascinating counterpoint to all the doom and gloom. Jacob Riggs is a British researcher who wanted to move to Australia. So he applied for a national innovation visa.
Which I assume is usually reserved for like Nobel Prize winners or Olympic athletes, right?
Usually, yes.
Yeah.
It's subclass 858. It requires exceptional talent. Mm-hmm. It's a very high bar to clear. So how did he prove he was exceptional?
I love this part.
While he was waiting for the decision, he legally hacked the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.
That is such a bold strategy. Please let me into your country. Also, I just broke into your government.
It sounds completely crazy, but he did it fully under their vulnerability disclosure framework. Yeah. He found a critical issue, something that definitely could have been used by bad actors, and he reported it very responsibly.
All right.
They fixed it, and they put him on their security honor roll.
And then comes the power move.
Yes. He took that honor roll listing and sent it straight to the immigration department as proof of his exceptional talent.
And it actually worked.
It worked perfectly. He got the visa. And this is so significant because it shows that immigration and talent programs are finally starting to value demonstrated impact, like what you can actually do with your hands on a keyboard, over just fancy job titles or degrees.
If we really want to solve the talent crisis, we need way more of that lateral thinking. He literally hacked his way into a visa.
Exactly. We need to lower the friction for the good guys to actually help us.
Okay, for our final segment today, I want to look at what resilience actually looks like on the ground. Because we throw around the term cyber resilience a lot, but it's honestly just a buzzword until things break.
That's very true.
And we have two very different stories in the sources today. One is a complete nightmare, and one is basically a dream scenario.
Let's start with the nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
New Britain, Connecticut. A ransomware attack hits the city.
And the image the report paints here is just vivid. City systems are completely down for more than 48 hours. Police and fire departments are operating manually. But the detail that really stuck with me was the trash collection.
Right, because municipalities have what we call no-fail missions.
Yeah.
Even if the servers are completely melted down, the trash still has to be picked up, or the rats come.
Yeah.
The snow still has to be plowed, or the roads close, and ambulances can't get through.
So you literally have city employees using pen and paper, driving their routes from memory.
Pen and paper, communicating via handheld radio, because the entire digital backbone of the city is gone. It really highlights just how fragile our digital dependency actually is.
It's scary to think about.
It's not just about losing data. It's about whether the garbage truck knows where to turn left. The cyber attack spills over into the physical world almost immediately.
It's pure chaos. But then compare that to the Australian gold producer mentioned in the bulletin.
This is the success story we all want. An unnamed ASX-listed company. They detected unauthorized activity in November of 2025.
And what did they do differently than Connecticut?
Automated safeguards kicked in instantly. Boom. Access shut down immediately across the board. They didn't wait for a committee meeting. The system just reacted.
Did they lose any data?
No data exported at all. No ransom paid. Operations were restored extremely quickly. They issued a statement saying, effectively, we saw it. We stopped it. We are fine.
That sounds so boring.
And that is the highest compliment you can possibly pay a security team. Notice the difference in the narrative there. In Connecticut, it's chaos and pen and paper and local news crews everywhere.
Mm.
In Australia, it's a calm, boring corporate statement.
Mm-hmm, right.
The takeaway here is that the gold producer had their investigation, containment, and communication completely ready to go. They made the incident entirely negative for impact.
That has to be the goal, to just make the hack boring.
Exactly. A boring hack is a successful defense.
So let's quickly recap where we've been today. We started with the terrifying stat that fraud is now impacting almost everyone personally. We looked at the new big three of AI, geopolitics, and fraud.
Yep.
We saw how Nike is dealing with the new steal and leak tactic and how governance, boring, paper-pushing governance, is actually your absolute best defense in court.
And we also saw that while the talent gap is very real, there are creative ways to bridge it if we are actually willing to look at results rather than resumes.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you, the listener, with something to really chew on. We talked earlier about that time to exploit dropping to just one day.
Right. And that raises a really, really uncomfortable question for everyone listening. If AI has compressed the attack timeline down to 24 hours, I want you to look at your own organization. Think about your board structure, your legal reviews, your governance committees.
I think I know exactly where you are going with this.
In a world of one-day exploits, is it possible that our human governance structures, those exact, slow, methodical approvals we just spent 10 minutes praising, are actually becoming our biggest single vulnerability simply because they are way too slow?
That is such a tough tension to navigate. You need the documentation to survive the inevitable lawsuit, but the documentation process itself might be too slow to actually stop the hack from happening.
Or is that slow, methodical documentation the literal only thing that saves us when the inevitable finally happens? It's a paradox we're really going to have to learn to live with in 2026.
Something to definitely think about the next time you are sitting in a risk committee meeting wondering why it's taking so long.
Yeah.
Check your own governance readiness and maybe double check those AI settings while you're at it. Thanks for diving in with us today.
Stay safe out there.